Hey, After Buzzers, before we move on to your next topic, we just want to say thanks to our sponsor, Anchor. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. Plus, there are creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Also, Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Plus, you can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor FM to get started.
Hey guys, Maria Menounos here. Before your favorite AfterBuzz TV after show begins, I'm so excited to tell you that my new cookbook is out. It's called The Every Girl's Guide to Cooking. It's the quickest, fastest, easiest, most amazing recipes for kitchen newbies and chefs alike. Please check out MariaMenounos.com for more info. Buzz you later.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Welcome, After Buzzers, to the House of Cards Chapter 42 After Show. My name is Shaka Smith. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Shaka Strong. I'm joined by my host.
Hey, Michael Klaus. You can follow me on Instagram at TheOnlyMC, on Twitter at Michael Klaus TV.
Cool.
Mr. Ellis?
I am Kevin Ellis. You can find me on Twitter at TheKevinEllis or on Instagram at Kevin J. Ellis, or KevinEllis25. Throw my middle initial in there sometimes and you never know.
He's got multiple accounts.
Yeah. I might actually.
Well, this was a great episode. I would be remiss if I didn't enjoy the fact that I was right last week on my prediction.
Here we go.
Super stoked. I thought it would show up later on in the episodes, but wow, she went for the VP spot this episode. It was amazing. I was kind of fist pumping there for myself.
I was ambitious, yeah. But you nailed it.
Yeah, and it was such a good, I thought this was actually a very female empowered episode. And I went back and I looked, and I love it because Robin Wright directed this episode. And
that's so, true, yeah.
Yeah, so it was pretty
totally
interesting.
Missed it in the credits.
Yeah, I was like, wow, okay. So what did you guys think about the kind of feminist theme or about, you know, how she was really taking control of her life?
Well, it was her, but it was also, I mean, you know, Celia and Congresswoman Jones also stood up there and, you know, laid the hammer down when Frank tried to get him to come back as well. So it wasn't, you know, just Claire, but them as well. And, you know,
I think that there was no surprise that at one point in time they were at Limestone College, yeah. And when Celia was up on the stage talking about what the college represented historically, she was even giving a couple of adjectives, and she was describing the women as intelligent, worthy, and those who possessed strength. And it was all of these characteristics that we see Claire embody. And right after that, Celia introduces Claire. Yeah. I don't think that it was any surprise, and mm-hmm. I just thought it was a nice little addition to the episode.
Yeah, and when we kind of talk about these feminist themes, there were a couple of points where we had a moment with Leanne talking to Chase, and you know, she's doing the whole payoff. But I don't know if you guys caught when she's leaving, he says something, you know, some fries with that shake.
Yeah, fries with that shake.
Yeah.
And I loved how she put him right in his place and just let him know that she was about her business, you mm-hmm. know? And
so that was a weird comment.
Yeah, I think they want to underscore the fact that, you know, women are still viewed in a certain way, especially in different parts of the country by different people, and they really had to assert her power. And so mm-hmm. I just love seeing that theme throughout. And I think he even saw it a little bit with Claire's mom, how they're both back and forth with the earrings, and
yeah,
there's a lot in this episode where you can point to different women who make just empowering moves and you know, show this strength that you just don't see in other series. It's really cool. You see it in Dunbar, you see it in Claire, you see it in, you know, Doris Celia. It's just it's never ending in this series.
Yeah, and it's crazy because Claire's mom, it's like these two strong women against each other, and she's just trying to take power where she can get it. So yeah, I took your earrings, you know, you took my money, I took your earrings.
Yeah,
you know?
That scene to open it up really I thought was interesting in that there wasn't you know, too much back and forth, like, anger. It was just, like, silent and, like, this is what I'm doing. This is it. And it's, like, very silent almost.
Yeah, these two women just vying for what they can have. And you know what Claire says, I will come and go as I please. So I thought that was very telling for the future of the series.
It's such it's such a cold interaction between the two. I hope that they can be on terms where they can truly be mother and daughter, as most people see
it
that
would be
relationship.
Nice to see, right?
But I mean, I just don't see it happening going forward because you know we're told and it's revealed this episode that Frank's father-in-law actually had fundraised his campaign for a congressman, and that relationship between those two had almost ended Elizabeth's relationship with her own husband just because she hates Frank so much, which is fascinating.
Yeah, it's a great dynamic to see play out on screen.
There was something that I was questioning, you know, throughout that when they have that fight is her mother still funding her to an extent and still plugging money, or is she pulling that? I mean, that's something that hasn't really been addressed too much.
Well, I'm guessing it looks like the mom is doing this because Claire has threatened to sell the family home if she doesn't. Mm-hmm. So I think she's just kind of been complicit in saying, I'll give you this money, but I'm going to hold on to what I can where I can.
Exactly.
I thought we had a really interesting... So it started off with a reporter seeing that Dunbar's coming to town, Frank's moving to going to Gaffney, and he just can't help himself. All he's got to do is stay in this witness protection program, relax, chill out. But he really wants, I guess, his old life back. What did you guys think about, I guess, that whole story arc?
Go ahead, sir.
I think he thinks he has nothing to lose. And to an extent, he's right. I mean, when you're in that position, if you're someone who is like him, who's always been in charge, always been someone in control and, you know, seeking things out, to just be in a corner, that's a dull life. And I think you would think, well, I've been to the bottom. You know, where can I go from here? I've already been taken, you know, stripped of everything, including my dignity.
Well, you can go further as he does.
Well, quite literally.
Well, yeah.
He's in a desperate state, and you feel for Lucas. I mean, we saw him in the beginning of season two. He lost Zoe, which was big. I mean, that was, in many respects, you know, his love. And for not only that to be taken away from him, but for nobody to believe him at all. I mean, he has these truths that he wants to reveal to the world, but he doesn't have the power or influence that all these other people do in the series to to where he can actually be heard. And it's a telling theme in this series. Everybody wants to be heard, and you're seeing somebody who just isn't given the time of day and who is going to extreme lengths to make his own name right. I mean, you know, when he gets back into the car, you're just like, wow, I mean, this guy really is at his lowest point, but he feels like he has something to gain, and that's admirable. He feels like he has something to bring to the table.
It makes you root for him.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I think that was such a sad moment, but it makes me go, what else is he going to be willing to do to get back to the life he wants? Mm-hmm. So, because now you do know he really had, it underscored his desperation.
At this point, I feel like he's willing to give his own life for the truth to be revealed. I think it's no coincidence that the means in which he was able to actually see that Dunbar was coming to town that is the fact that it was in a newspaper, you know, him being a journalist, him actually being a reporter.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of cool. And you see that he, you know, he had a life when he goes on over to the campaign office. You know, he sits down, he was doing his thing. He was getting a press pass. He was manipulating the system to the way that he could. He just can't manipulate it to the point that others, these politicians, are able to do. And it sets him back.
Yeah. Even you notice too, when he has the newspaper and he tears off the part for Dunbar, puts it, you know, the rest in there, he takes the coffee and throws it on Frank.
Yeah.
It just is a little dinky thing like that, that it's like, you know, anything to spite. Anything.
Great imagery.
Just so anger.
Yeah, I think we're going to see something from him very soon. We see, like, Remy is out of the game. He wants to get back in. This guy's out of the game. He wants to get back in. I think it'll be explosive when he gets back in the game.
Totally. I think so. And I think he will. I think by the end of the season, we're going to see something crazy
from
Lucas.
He's got to, because, you know, where else can his character go? You know?
Yeah, first scene of the season was Lucas. Yeah.
And he's one of the few people, I think, that has information that can tear Frank down.
Yeah.
and actually would. And you see even later in the episode with Meacham, of Meacham is maybe tested a little bit, but his loyalty is still there.
Yeah.
So the people that know things, he has control over that loyalty. He doesn't have the loyalty of Lucas, or now Doug.
Yeah.
Right, is his name. That's his witness protection name, I think.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, because they call him Doug, and I was like, oh my goodness. Like, we didn't have already have 90 names to remember. Let's switch up Lucas's name.
After that scene, we go to the church scene, which mm-hmm. which I love. It's so kind of life imitating art, or you know, back vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So he's courting the black vote, and mm-hmm. you know, as a Democrat, he's already kind of got that to some degree on his yes. side, and this kind of sets us up for later on in the episode. What did you guys think of his speech and how he's they're doing the great cuts between him doing the speech preparations and then delivering?
Yes. And also, what I was really surprised about that and really took from that is where he had Doris and Celia in there. And it was like, yeah. That's a total Frank move of like, he sees something that originally Claire had, and he has not only taken it, but he's gone to the extreme and now got them on their side and recruiting for him.
Yeah.
And so it's like a Frank of, you know, going, you know, making sure he goes 0 to 10. He's going to 10. He's going to get it.
The great thing about this, the whole speech, is it set the stage for the entire episode.
Yeah.
Just everything about it. He brought up poverty, gas crisis, racism, Frank's own background, just the history of his family, youth. Just everything was put into that speech. And what was great is we saw the emotion of all of those in the pews. You got to see standing ovation, applause after every single time he finished speaking, smiles. All of these things that we saw at the beginning of the episode was the complete contrary at the end. Yeah. It was just so well done.
And do you think we actually, though, got to see a piece of Frank in that speech? Because this was the first time he actually looked presidential to me. Because even at the State of the Union, that was really about, you know, F you, Claire. Yeah. So this was the first time he looked very political. He was a politician.
And he was doing the speech on his own, too, which is something that I appreciated, where it wasn't like he had, you know, working with a speechwriter, where you see the flashbacks of him kind of writing it and figuring out what he wants. It was just him.
Yeah.
And so it really took me, you know, kind of in his mindset, which I appreciated, kind of what you talked about.
Yeah, they haven't humanized him much, but that was a moment where there was almost a little bit of that. Mm-hmm.
And if you notice in his speech, he also, you know, his whole message is coming together as one, which obviously you take to the very end of the episode, and it's what Claire wants. And so it is that theme that is there throughout of coming together as one and succeeding.
And then after these scenes, we have Leanne now back into play with Claire.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about how they go about really setting Frank up?
I thought it was so devious. I mean, when she goes on in, there was almost like there was no caution. She didn't even check behind her when she closes the key to the other safe deposit box and goes on into Frank's. I don't know. What did you guys think when she was taking the pictures? Because I was curious. I'm like, okay, what is she taking pictures of? I'm thinking. Yeah. Nudes? Yeah. Nudes of Frank with, I mean, because we know that he has a homosexual past to some degree.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, like, why there would be any, you know, why there would be any photographs of that sort in a safe deposit box. But then when we...
Yeah, and again, it was one of these episodes that when I watched it the second time, so much more made sense. Because sometimes I'm watching things, I'm wondering, what's happening? What's that going to lead to?
Right.
And it was great to watch it a second time to go, okay, that's what they're setting up. That's what was working.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes these are just, you have to watch it twice.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's, you're pausing and like, oh, figuring out where this is all going.
Yeah, I mean, they're so good at weaving this complicated story and kind of keeping us engaged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, when you don't even catch it. I had to watch it a second time, and I caught when they were on the plane, Leanne and Claire, and how Claire was saying to her, you know, Frank really needs South Carolina, and she was talking about Orrin too, and it brought up Orrin, and it was just like one of those fleeting comments that you just, you know, you don't really put any thought into, and then when it comes down to it, you're like, oh great, Orrin.
And the first time I saw it, I thought she was going to help him with South Carolina. I thought she was coming back to the fold and really going to do her job.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to take a quick break here. A couple questions. Are you curious about a celebrity boyfriend's midlife crisis? Do you enjoy hearing stories about behind the scenes of Hollywood, the gossip, the secrets? You know, everyone wants to. They read the magazines. We're going to give it to you on a show. Are you amused by old TV and movie references, some humor, some good guests? Well, we have all that in a new show here for AfterBuzz. It's called The Tomorrow Show. It's with Kevin Undergaro, who is Maria Menounos' fiancé. There's also a lot of other AfterBuzz personalities. We have Ashley Daniels, Roxy Stryer, and others. It's a new show. It started last week. It's Monday and Thursday nights from 7 to 9 Pacific time. So that is 10 to midnight if you're on the East Coast. And if you're in the middle, I'll let you figure it out. My math isn't the best. But it's free on iTunes. You can go to tomorrowshow.com. You can check it out on Instagram, on Twitter. On Monday, they had Farrah Abraham from Teen Mom. So they're actually getting some pretty good guests on there. I saw I think I saw some puppies.
Puppies are always good, yeah.
So you know what? Who can go wrong with puppies? It's National Puppy Day today.
Oh, really?
So
oh.
It is.
Wow.
Okay. So my Instagram was completely flooded with puppies, and I was just emotional all day. That's what it is.
You can certainly understand that.
But so check it out. Seriously, it's a good show.
Very cool.
So we're getting back to Oren.
Yeah, getting back into this. Well, we get Claire joining Frank. She finally comes back. Mm-hmm. And we get the whole Limestone College, and Frank has another one of his famous asides. It's almost like she never left. So yeah. He's still skeptical. What did you guys think about his skepticism?
What did you think when he, when she came in the door of their house?
Yeah.
I almost thought we saw a little more human side of him there too. There was just like that almost seemed like a connection, and you wanted it to be more deep down inside. I think I knew that there was obviously a plan behind it, and there was a reason that she was there.
Yeah.
But I didn't want it. I didn't want there to be another reason. I wanted it to be because they actually cared about each other, and they actually wanted each other to succeed.
Well, I think we see Frank is skeptical of her motives, but later on we kind of see her. She's laying the groundwork for the VP conversation.
Totally.
Yes.
But that groundwork also seemed rooted in something genuine. Mm-hmm. When she talks about the house, and she says, this house was a palace because it was ours. Mm-hmm. What did you guys think about
that? She specifically stayed in, you know, his room to be able to have that interaction.
Totally. I think that there's an aspect of Claire. She has gotten in this relationship for her own personal benefit. And what she's seeing is that these two have been through a great deal together. All of the struggles Frank thinks are all struggles that he has endured. Mm-hmm. But she's trying to change the narrative and try and make him realize that these are the struggles that we endured. It's not about you, Frank. Yeah. It's about us. And he's totally blind to this. As you see, he even says, well, at the very end, we'll get to that. But when it comes down to it, he just doesn't grasp this concept yet. And she's, as you said, trying to lay the groundwork to try and make him more caring and thoughtful and realize that, you know, the two of us were meant to do this together and we can do it together.
Mm-hmm. It made me like Claire more.
Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there's something, I think we're all rooting for these two just as to be a couple again, kind of like their idea as a power couple.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, it's a great relationship because you know that they're both trying to suit their own personal needs, but their own personal needs are only best when they're together.
Exactly. Yeah,
they can't really succeed on their own.
No.
And we now know that Frank has got a torrent of trouble. So of course you got the reporter kind of, you know, bubbling under the surface. And now we have these gas prices, which kind of came out of nowhere, right?
Yeah, that was interesting how it was like all these problems that are boiling up.
Well, I mean, and it's all tied to Russia and to Petrov, which was just one of those little things. We knew that Petrov would become a bigger issue in this episode politically, not necessarily personally, but politically. And it's showing right off the bat in these plot lines.
Do you think it's realistic that they're blaming Frank as much as they are on the show? He's just taken office. He hasn't been in office that long. He's sort of like a replacement president, and they're really blaming him very hard for these gas prices.
The president gets the blame. You get the you get the credit. President doesn't control gas prices. With Bush and Obama, I mean, the gas prices, they fluctuate. I don't think the president has that much control, but, you know, people want to blame someone when you're going to the pump and you're paying $40, $50, $60.
Yeah. I mean, who knows what the Republican Party is spewing at this point in time and when what the news outlets are actually talking about, because we're really left without knowing that. But you have to imagine that at least Petrov, or at least Frank, had actually brought on Claire as the United Nations ambassador, who had worked with Petrov. There was a relationship there. Mm-hmm. There were mistakes there. She had stepped down as the United States ambassador to the United Nations. So you have to imagine that there's a link being drawn between at least Frank's decisions with his relationship with Russia and the current gas prices. You have to imagine that there's some kind of narrative being thrown
out
there.
And one of the things the president can do is release the strategic reserve.
Yeah.
And they kind of tell him, that's not going to be enough. You need to work with Petrov. Yeah. And Frank says, let's go with the idea of invading them with fear.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll give him Cold War number two.
Give him Milken.
Yeah.
You know, put him on in a border country, in a place to succeed, and kind of make it seem like he's going to rise up.
Yeah. So
playing politics.
So do we see like a major Cold War number two blowout here? Is that what Frank is going to be faced with?
I certainly see in the next couple episodes it's going to be a very, you know, big issue.
Yeah. I'm excited for the return of Petrov. I love his character.
Great character.
Yeah. He's amazing.
It's very Putin-esque. I mean, as we've mentioned before, yeah. It's like they found the perfect guy for that character. Mm-hmm. It's so well done. So cold, but calculating. I love it.
Exactly. And what we have again is Frank's. He keeps having these visions. So now I'm a little, like, before I thought it was very artistic, the visions. Now I'm wondering, is Frank actually suffering from a problem here? But he's having these visions of him and Claire mauling each other. Is that
and
just
the blood?
Him? Yeah, and the blood from the tap. So is that him just being aware that she's not fully on board? Or do you think he might have some issues here?
I think that his subconscious knows that he has to be careful with her. And I don't want to draw too many conclusions. I'm a little afraid to think about the prospect of him killing his own wife. And I, you know, I'm already seeing like American Mad Men, you know, you're being very careful and not revealing too much on here. So I appreciate that. Yeah. But I can only imagine some of the things that are going to happen this season. Yeah. And I mean, just anything happening to Claire is like my last thought right now.
Yeah, it can't happen. I might stop watching this show. I'd be like, what?
I'd be out of nowhere. Yeah, I mean, it's gruesome imagery with blood just flowing out of the faucet and then him like putting up to his mouth only to reveal water. As I said, his subconscious is just reeling right now. It's like he wants to put it aside, his hatred for his own wife at this very moment. Yeah. But he has to come to terms with logic, knowing that he's down in the polls. She can benefit him, and he's hopefully going to come to...
He is trying to dig himself out of a hole.
He is.
I mean, he's in a big hole. You look at just all the way around with the things that he's facing in the country, as well as the polls, as well as the situation with Claire. And so I think that, you know, we're three episodes in. I think that's really how they wanted to set up this season.
Yeah.
Is he has to overcome even more.
Yeah. We have the powder keg of this episode is this big billboard, this huge thing showing Frank's father with the KKK.
Which was put up, you know, we talked about Orin Chase, and that's another character where you knew he was someone.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, who is this guy? I remember when Leanne goes and visits him and you're like, okay.
I've seen you before.
Yeah. Who is this guy? You're paying him $120,000. You know, why is he this person? And I actually thought it would be something bigger. Did you guys think it would be something bigger when they talked about, you know, here's this photo. I have a couple people in print. I thought it would be more than a billboard.
Oh, I mean, to me, it was actually the biggest it could get. I mean, I thought that was bad. I mean, this huge billboard with the KKK, that's what was so jarring. That he was literally at this moment trying to get the black community, trying to really, you know, he starts off in the church, boom.
You know. I'm just surprised it wasn't torn. I think it would be easy to tear down.
Yeah.
Like, someone sees it and you go rip it down.
It's a billboard. They took it down probably within what? Maybe
I'm sure pretty quickly.
The morning hours.
But no, because they had all the news crews out there with it in the background.
I think the great thing about what they did is I have to assume that it's just that small town mentality. It's like word travels quickly.
Once it gets out.
Once it gets out, it's out and it becomes a big deal. And you know, you saw just that interracial relationship between the two. And it was both kind of like this feeling like, what is it? Are you seeing what I'm seeing right here?
Yeah, when the black guy pulls over and he's just like...
You're this big husky guy with tattoos. He's just like, what is happening here?
But so Orin Chase is the guy, you know, I had to go look it up. He is season one flashback of him and Frank have a run-in over the death of a young girl, and Orin Chase tries to kind of, you know, use that against Frank and kind of bury him and go for the congressional spot. Frank obviously wins out. It kind of destroys him, and so there is that bitterness there as we see. But I really had to Google that and look up, okay, who is this guy? We've seen him before.
Yeah, they're so brilliant about keeping these narratives. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they make sure they're consistent throughout season to season.
Yep.
Yeah, and Orin almost didn't need the money. You could tell it's like it was a bonus.
Yeah.
He was just happy to get back at
this
Frank.
This is a lot of
It
was $120,000,
but it was like it was a bonus. It was like he was already willing to do it, and like when he received the money, he's like, oh. Okay, I'll take this.
And he becomes, it looks like, maybe the potential for what undoes Frank, because we know that he talks to Orin, he wants Orin to just kind of say, I was paid, but not say who it is, but the public will think it was Dunbar.
Yeah.
Brilliant move, normally, but now we know Dunbar wants to now take a look at this reporter. She dismissed the reporter's allegations before, but now she's saying, Let's take a look.
Because she thinks that Frank purposely did it. And it's interesting to the mind games that go on in the spin. How can you spin this?
Yeah.
You know, and for her to think, oh, maybe Frank did this on purpose. Maybe Frank put up a KKK sign of his father to screw his campaign so he could bounce back.
Yeah.
Like, only in a presidential election would you think, well, maybe that could
self-sabotage would be the right. Yeah, it makes no sense to the normal layman. But then, like, in this world, you're like, okay, I guess it's a plausible result. Yeah. Like, no,
it's like playing Battleship, but you just call out, you know, F6, and you hope you hit. Yeah, okay, let's go.
It's a good analogy there.
But how do you think Frank responds to that? You know, I said that I was very surprised that he did not almost offer a, you know, an answer or a reason faster. This happened on primary day in his home state. You would, I would assume that people are going to the polls and you want to get out ahead of this as fast as possible. But you said, you know, you have to be careful in what you say.
Exactly. So it had to be well thought out. I mean, there was two different routes. We could deny it to even his father and say this picture's not real or it's photoshopped, or you own it, but you give a good reason for why it's the case. And he ended up with owning it. But I think it took time to figure out what the optics were. How widely covered is this? How many people have already voted? How quickly does our response need to be? There's so many different analyses that go into that.
You also need the right messenger too. I mean, he was he was looking to different people, and Doris and Celia totally left him in the cold.
Yeah,
I mean, just totally dropped him, and rightfully so, considering the matter. And Celia was a lot more passionate. And I love how Frank says, "You know, would you give the phone to your mother?" Yeah. And like, you know, she totally shuts her down. Yeah. And Doris was a lot more eloquent, more of a politician, telling him, "You know, you've put us in an awkward
position. But you thought, you know, until we're no longer beaten, until we're no longer shot. And so she brought in that real historic, you know, because you think a picture with the KKK, oh, okay, whatever, so many years ago, not so bad. But here was this woman that lived through
it, so
present for her.
Yes.
And so that was one of those moments where it was another moment of female empowerment, where it was just like, no, we're not going to do what you say, Mr. President. We're on a different page.
He had nothing to retort to that.
And that's when you start to see, too, the tide turning with Seth. What do you guys think of that?
Because now he's being accused of, you know, possibly helping the other campaign.
Yeah, he's dug himself a hole. He feels like he needs to rectify his own position to where he becomes a little bit more trustworthy. It's like he had built this trust, and then he had gotten to a point where he was unsure of his own position and his status within this regime. And by revealing that they had marital issues to the press, he dug himself in a hole to where now he's fighting for his own survival. Again,
but he doubled down.
He doubled down, which was crazy.
By taking the picture of Frank at the public outing, which I think was from season 2 or season 3. You know, if we remember, I think him going out there, and it's like, I don't know. I see him gone in like 2 or 3 episodes. I see him out of the picture.
Well, I think he's one of Seth and Meacham. To me, are the two dark horses. You know, where I don't know what they're going to do, but I feel like they have the potential for a lot of damage. And we had that moment where Frank just wants to trust Meacham and know he wasn't the leak. And what did you think about that nonverbal body language? It was so nonverbal to me.
Yeah,
I loved it. I see Meacham as just this. This little boy who almost like didn't have a father, and like he views Frank as that figure. And though they've had an interesting relationship in the past, it's like I can't not like bring that up. But
it's part of it. Yeah,
but it's part of it. Yeah. It's like there's like a nurturing nature about Frank to Meacham. It's like he has to protect him, and Meacham's going to do whatever he can to look out for Dad. It's weird.
I'm wary of Meacham. I feel like the most loyal people tend to be.
I'm not either.
I just feel my sense, especially with the bedroom scene from, you know, what is it, 1 or 2 episodes ago, he wants to be more involved with Frank. He wants to be more of a trusted confidant. And I'm wondering if Claire's return will set him and Claire at odds, and if he will actually take any affirmative steps to do anything.
See, I think Meacham comes at it from the perspective of Frank has already helped him out. And Frank kind of already earned that trust and loyalty from, you know, kind of what he was saying. Of, he brings up the story of when he was fired from the Capitol Police, and he says, you know, you saved me.
Yeah.
And so I think he owes that debt of gratitude,
whereas
that's something that Seth doesn't have.
Yeah.
I mean, he just gave Seth a job. He didn't kind of save his life and re-alter it.
Yeah.
Right.
So what do you guys think? Let us know. Reach out on the chat here on YouTube. Also reach out on Twitter. We'd love to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, what would it be? H-O-C?
H-O-C.
A-B-T-V?
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, just use that hashtag and we'll...
Hashtag H-O-C... ABTV.
And we're all kind of checking our Twitters, so we...
Yeah, we all have them up. We also have the chat room up.
Thank you, American Madman, again, and Fantasy Stats Guru for contributing to the conversation online. We'll get to your questions and comments in due time.
And another thing to note, I guess, about Robin directing this, which I actually thought about, because for a very long time, I saw Robin Wright Penn as the wife of Sean Penn. I knew she was an actress. I'd seen some of her stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like her own life is, to some degree, reflected in Claire in terms of getting free of that shadow. And here she is directing the episode where Claire is really coming back full force. And what I saw on IMDb is she directs 42, 43, 48, and 49. So I'll be looking very closely at those episodes.
So even the next one, too,
She directs the next one, and then 48 and 49 towards the end. So we'll see how it ends. So basically, why don't we get into predictions?
All right. Let's get into our predictions.
Real quick. Yeah. Did we talk about the story of Frank? He actually explained the photo. Real quick.
Oh, yes. We'll talk about it.
We can do predictions first.
Yeah, I mean, we can get into a couple of predictions, because I'm sure that we have them, and we can kind of segue into their final conversation, because Frank and Claire's standoff at the end is pretty essential. But yeah, I don't know. Who wants to go first in predictions?
I kind of already made one a little bit. I think Seth is out in about 3 episodes. Okay. I say 2 to 3 episodes, because I see the next episode or two, I see a huge Russia explosion of that's going to be the main focus. But I see in 2 to 3 episodes if Seth is out. You could tell he tried to blame Meacham, and I think that definitely backfired.
Yeah.
I think he would have been better off not saying anything at all and just kind of leaving it be. But I think him trying to blame someone, and then they were able to, I think Frank, you know, kind of caught him in that and said, oh, he's really just grasping for straws, and I think he'll be out in 2 to 3 episodes.
I'm hoping to see a bigger role in Doug. We haven't seen a lot of badass Doug Stamper in this season so far, and I'm really ready for it. And I'm thinking that there could be a little bit closer of a relationship now with Frank and Meacham, just because of the fact that Frank just doesn't have anybody he can really confide in at the moment. He used to have his wife. Stamper's just kind of off in DC. He's kind of been on his own on the campaign trail, so now he's got Meacham to really put his own trust in. I think so. I hope something good comes of that.
Well, this one was difficult for me because I felt this was the episode where they put everything into play. So it was just like, anything can blow up, you know, the next few episodes. And I really thought Claire would go for that VP thing a lot later towards the end of the season. So what I'm thinking now is the return of Petrov. He's got to come back full force. Frank's already got this almost, to me, ridiculous plan to kind of intimidate Russia, which seems like the worst idea. Mm-hmm. So that's got to blow up, and it's got to blow up quickly, because it looks like they really are pushing things a lot.
Do you see that hurting her VP spot? Because obviously what happened with her in the UN, of the global thing coming in to be a much bigger issue, and that hurting her as a strong candidate?
No, because we know that Frank is completely against Claire being the VP. Absolutely. But I must imagine there's going to be a way for her to get on that ticket, and I would think it would be through Petrov. So I think there will be some escalation with Petrov, and she might be the answer to de-escalate. And so, I mean, my assumption is she will end up on this VP ticket. I mean,
I think so.
It's just
too
good television if it happens, right?
So, I hate it though. Interesting. I hate it though.
Really?
Because, and one of the things that I've thoroughly enjoyed about this show so far is that I feel like it's been realistic, in that I can look at it and say, you know, this is politics.
Yeah.
You know, this is the fight for power. This is kind of what actually happens behind the scenes, and it's very realistic. And a husband and wife on a ticket, I just don't see that as realistic. I don't see that as winnable, especially in this show. It really does take place in present day.
Yeah.
And I think people are, you know, especially in this election, when you have, you know, Donald Trump and you had even Ben Carson and you have, you know, a lot of outsiders succeeding so much because people don't want that much power in the White House. They don't want that much power, you know, in control. And to have two people in the same family, I just don't think that is realistic in today's age.
Well, I mean, like, yeah, but 10 years ago, who would have thought we would ever have a black president, let alone now have the potential to have a woman president?
Yeah.
It's just like,
things are just changing. But this show prides itself in present day.
Well, I think, I think you look at 92 and you look at Bill Clinton, and they sold Bill Clinton as a package deal with Hillary. They sold him as you get a twofer.
Yeah.
And so you get two for the price of one, and that's how he was able to win. And so I think it is plausible. And I think with the Bill and Hillary's of today, if somehow he could have another shot at a third term and he had Hillary as his VP, I don't think too much of us would you know, blanch at that.
And I think it's also the fact that Claire, again, she has these high approval ratings. I mean, she is more favored than her own husband, who has the power of the presidency.
Yeah.
So it's not crazy for somebody to say, or to at least put out the message that, you know, this is my wife.
Yeah.
She is by my side all the time. She knows exactly how to run a country. She has all of the redeeming qualities that I do, if not more. I mean, it's a great message to the American people that, hey, you can put your trust in this woman, as I have with my life, with her being my wife and making that decision to marry her.
And at the State of the Union, he praised her for working with Russia. So if she somehow comes back in and de-escalates, I think that would certainly...
If she can do that, that would help. Otherwise, I look at it for everything that she is, it's also everything that she is not, and that you pick a VP to reach out to the demographics that you don't have. For her, same state. I mean, you maybe get Texas a little bit, but I mean, you get that South Carolina, you get the female gender, so you get there. But otherwise, you have too many allies together, I think. I think you want to pick a VP that's different to get the different vote that you don't have.
Well, I don't know. Because as you said, Frank is very good at messaging, and he did that with the KKK. So what did you guys think of how he was able to spin that pretty brilliantly?
I loved it.
Yeah.
And I love just the explanation of you really saw more into his past and more into his father's past of this is where he came from.
Yeah.
And he said, this is the one moment I was proud of my father because he did whatever it took.
And yeah, we didn't see that till a little bit later, because at first when he comes up with that spin argument, I think we're all thinking politics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then when you see him with Claire, he's like, I was proud of that moment. Because so you really got the sense his father wasn't a racist. He really did that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was proud of it, that he did whatever it took. And that small town feel, or that idea that he was lesser and trying to come up, I thought resonated very well.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw it kind of even went back to the church scene, where he's talking about, I had it rough, but you guys had even rougher.
Yeah.
And so I think it really helped make him, from a viewer side, a very human person. Obviously, obviously, if you're a voter in that world, you wouldn't have seen those private moments. But I think they're making an attempt to humanize Frank.
Definitely.
And so I don't know to what end or what will, like, how that will play, but I think we're going to see a more human Frank as these episodes go on.
Yeah, from the man who peed on his own father's grave to the man who's now who's now memorializing his father as honorable. It's fascinating to see. And beautifully acted scene by Kevin Spacey when he's with Claire. I mean, the raw emotion that he had, there was this contempt, this hatred towards his wife, but also this endearing quality where, you know, you see this man who has struggled, and that was the theme of the episode.
Yeah.
Is just this doing everything at all costs to survive. You know, you saw it with Lucas, you see it with Frank, you see it with Claire trying to, you know, redeem herself and make something of her life to what she would like her dreams to be. It's a great way of bringing it all together.
Yeah, and did that scene shock you? Because it shocked me to a certain degree, because I thought he might be for it. You know, I thought, get my wife back,
put on the ticket, how he would respond.
High approval ratings, but he just
shot it down.
Yeah,
I think it was pretty raw, like, emotion from the fact that she, you know, he saw her try and sabotage him, and he knows how calculating and dangerous she can be. But I think it kind of took him off guard, to where he was at a point where he did not know what to think anymore. He just saw his wife sabotage his election in South Carolina, his own home state.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's still kind of on the fence. He might just need a little bit of time to think about it.
Yeah, and we saw him fight back pretty hard at the State of the Union. So do you think, prediction-wise, there'll be another fight in him to really put her down? Or
man, he sees her power. He sees what she can do.
He knows what she's capable of.
And so does he get that axe in episode 43?
It's kind of letting himself be more vulnerable.
Yeah.
And that's what Frank has a hard time doing, is letting that vulnerable side come through. And if he can do that for his wife, you know, as many people would say, like, you can achieve anything once you let your walls down and, you know, and you actually break out into the world. And as president of the United States, you know, you have it all, yeah, in at least our eyes. But he just doesn't have that one thing. And that's really the true respect of his own wife.
Yeah.
And maybe that's where we'll see Doug in the next couple episodes, where he is doing more digging and try to bring up a lot of dirt on her. Oof. And kind of tearing, yeah, her down.
I mean, they have to have more dirt on her than they already know. Like, she already said, like, I can sabotage, yeah, your candidacy. Mm-hmm. She knows that she can do it. He knows that she can do it. So it's whether or not he's going to actually call her bluff and see how serious she is about this vice presidency.
Yeah, and I'll amend my prediction to some degree, because I just remembered Frank and that whole axe story about having to grab that axe.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a feeling it must come soon. So I think you're going to see him try to grab that axe in the next episode before the whole
God. I think you're right. I mean, it's definitely possible.
And he hates this idea.
Yeah. I see it happening, though. Yeah. I don't see it not happening. I see it happening of them being on the ticket together. Yeah. As much as I don't like it. Mm-hmm.
But I think it's going to be really bloody on the
it's
way
going
there.
To be very bloody. And that could be the fight. That's the fight that he's picturing and keeps reliving.
I mean, what? We're on episode 3. We've got 10 left.
10 left.
Yeah. 10 left. I mean, this is great. We got a lot to look forward to.
Yeah. Grueling.
Really hating the fact that we're watching one episode at a time.
I saw some comments. We are actually watching one episode at a time.
Yeah, it's literally awful. It is. It's painful.
It is.
It is.
But it's good. It's good, though, because I enjoy, you know, the wanting to wait and the build-up.
And when I binge-watch, I just watch every episode once. So it's actually cool to see the little things, you know, I miss when I only watch it one time.
I respect the writing of the show much more, just kind of going through and watching a couple of times just to know the little twists that they throw on in there. It's just, it's brilliant.
Yeah, and a lot of times, as I said, when you watch it again, you see where they were going at a point in time where you didn't see it before because you just didn't know what was coming. But you go back and watch it a second time, you go, that's why they put that little line in. That's why she looked at him that particular way. Sorry. So it's a fun show. Everything they do is very, very deliberate.
Yeah. Definitely. It's good.
Well, I think we've wrapped it up here. We missed one of our hosts, Maria, who will be back next week.
She has a sick cat.
Yeah, on Puppy Day.
On National Puppy Day, she has a sick cat.
That makes sense, right?
So
no coincidence.
We're not kitten either.
Touché.
Please join us again next week, guys, at 8 o'clock. I'm Shaka Smith. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Shaka Strong.
I'm Michael Klaus. You can follow me on Instagram at TheOnlyMC, on Twitter at Michael Klaus TV. Reach out.
And you can find me on Twitter at TheKevinEllis and on Instagram at KevinEllis25.
No J's in there. Yeah. No
J's at all.
And iTunes, download us, give us 5 stars, guys.
That's right.
Thanks for watching, guys.
Thanks for watching.
Have a good night, y'all.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.